is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
You're listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. News for your soul. Life-changing broadcasts to souls around the world since January 1997.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
All right, next up today, this Friday, Transformational Learning with Diane Hill. Diane is one of the newer hosts on News for the Soul and brings a huge area of deep learning not previously talked about, at least not in this way. So let's bring her on to reintroduce herself, her show, and what's up for today. Diane, welcome back.
Thanks, Nicole. Happy to be here.
Well, let's get you to do the ever-evolving intro of who you are and what the show is about.
That's a good word for it, ever-evolving. Well, my primary work is doing the transformational healing process that we've been talking about in the previous shows. And I do that work in healing work out of my lodge here in Six Nations. So I live at the Six Nations of the Grand River Territory, which is in Ontario. And the closest town to where I am of any size would be the city of Brantford. But we do have a small village center in the center of Six Nations, and that's called Ashwegan. And it's in Native linguistic talk, it's referred to as Oswege. So it means the place along the place with the willows. It's where the red willows, we have lots of willow trees here in that Grand River Valley. And so the community here is of Six Nations is about... I'm still working back. I'm old enough to still be working back in miles. I don't think in kilometers as yet. So it's about 9 by 9 miles square, and we're situated on that in that Grand River area of the valley, Grand River Valley, and it's quite beautiful. It's rolling hills. It's lots of farmland here, and the community is probably about 15,000 people living here on the reserve. So. We're not the largest land base of reserve, but we are the largest population of Native people living in one location in Canada. So there's probably 15,000 plus living here now. So in literally six different nations, plus those who have married in, are representatives here. So I'm from the Mohawk Nation. My clan is Bear. And so... And I make my home here, and my healing lodge is here where I do the work. It's a privately owned and operated healing lodge, well, owned and operated by myself. And then I have a staff who comes in and assists me with once a month programming. But we rooted our healing model in an indigenous story, in one of our histories of Haudenosaunee people. A lot of our history is passed down through an oral tradition, so there are stories that inform us or educate us. They keep us aware of the belief system that we would carry and pass on from generation to generation in that oral tradition. So my lodge here carries a Mohawk name. It's called Gutnikun Liotsula in Mohawk, and it means the fostering emergence of the good mind. And so that healing lodge, which is both doubles as my home as well as a lodge where people come for their weekend retreats here. So they do weekend healing retreats. And we've just recently rebuilt our sweat lodge. So we're thinking about operating the sweat lodge and opening it up for visitors and for people who come to participate. We're not quite sure what that looks like yet. But or how that's going to operate, because we used to do sweat lodges for people years ago, but then it became so labor intensive that I'm going to have to really look for a dedicated team in order to be able to operate and to make that service, those services available again. But it would be really good if we could, because it really complements the healing model quite well that I use here in the lodge here in Six Nations. And it would actually not just be complementary, but it actually kind of furthers, takes people a little bit further through the healing process and when they're doing their healing work. So I'd like to, you know, look at that more seriously and see how we might be able to operate that. And I need to find a dedicated team to assist me in doing that. So that's in the process, and I'm quite excited about that. To be able to share it, because it connects very much to the land and to the earth and to the elements of fire, water, earth, and air. And we have had ceremonial gatherings here over the past few months where the full moon ceremonies and such, and they've been well attended, and people are interested and people are learning. So I'm quite happy about the land-based work that we've just re-established. So we did it in the earlier days, kind of fell away, and we're coming back to it. And it seems like it's a good time to come back with COVID, the pandemic affecting people's activities. And we were homebound, and being able to, you know, work with the land and reconnect to the land, I didn't realize how much I missed it until we started to have that opportunity. So COVID gave us that opportunity to rethink and reconnect and reestablish ourselves. So that's awesome. I'm really happy to talk about that today, journey.
Wow. No, I don't, speaking of this, I can't think of any experience I've had with, communities, indigenous communities inviting the general public in for sweat lodge services. That's really cool. Is that something that's been done in other areas before?
Well, no, that's why I'm saying it's something that we've had to rethink and reestablish. And thanks to COVID, it provided us with an opportunity to slow down, provide everyone with an opportunity to slow down and be like focus more on what we on life, you know, things that we were too busy before to sort of pay attention to. And then COVID gave us this giant pause where we were able to stay home and refocus. And then part of that refocusing led me back to rethinking what we used to do many years ago when we first set up with Sweat Lodge work here. In those days, I'm going back now maybe about 20 years ago, we used to get together as mostly largely First Nations people, but we had non-Native people living among us and working with us. And so I was one of the ones who started opening that up here in my area to non-Native peoples. Because they were allies to us, they were helpful, they were advocates, they also came with many of their own gifts, and they were contributing. I didn't see them as anything different than us, really, right? It's just, you know, the color of their skin didn't matter, because we were all focused on offering spiritual work with people, and we all shared that in common, and we had that common interest. So I remember people coming and some camping and some staying in the house and people being together sharing our teachings with one another. And even though we came from different traditions and different backgrounds, I remember how enriched I was. And they too, you know, it was reciprocal. They were sharing what they knew around from their way of working in a spiritual tradition. And then we would share our ways of working and our spiritual cultural tradition. And it was such an enriching experience. And then what happened was is that it I don't know if you've ever been in a sweat lodge yourself, Nicole, but or been around them. So you know how much they're labor intensive, eh? So you have to collect the rocks the stones that would be used in there, which become, in ceremony, they become our grandfathers and our grandmothers. And we had to, collect those. We have to build a lodge out of saplings, collect the rocks, make sure we have the wood needed to fire as many stone as we need. And sometimes you can get up to 28 stones in a sweat lodge. And so that takes quite a bit of wood to be able to fire and to keep them hot, because you need them like red hot. They need to be quite warm before you take them in. Then we had to gather the medicines, and we had to clean the medicines, and then we had to, in our area, we don't have the cedar connection that people have in northern communities, so we would have to find other things. We would pick cedar to rim the lodge, and we might have to use towels or blankets to be able to put down for the people to sit on. And so, of course, the tarps that are covering this lodge, they need to be breathable. They need to be layered, because we're in the mother's womb when we're in the sweat lodge. So we have to make sure that it's dark, that it's like pitch black dark in there in order to do our ceremonies. And so it takes a lot of work to get ready. And then there's the actual ceremony itself, and depending on the conductor of that ceremony, and depending on what the focus of the sweat lodge is about, because there can be teaching sweats and healing sweats and sweats to just give thanks and sweats for families and sweats, there's all kinds of different purposes that you would use the sweat lodge for. And depending on what they are, the healing sweat being the most difficult, meaning the most, and also the longest. So you could go into a lodge, say, at 8 o'clock in the evening, and depending on how many people were in your lodge, if you had up to 10 or 12 people in that lodge, and it was for healing, and you were offering the opportunity for everyone to heal, you could, and they're talking in that lodge for so many rounds, we call them, could actually go in at 8 p.m. at night and come out, and it would be sunrise the next And I've been in lodges that where that's happened, where I could hear the birds singing, and then we're coming out, and the sun is coming up. And it's quite beautiful when that happens, but it's also quite amazing, because it's almost like the lodge itself is timeless. So when you're in that kind of ceremony, and people are releasing and grieving and sharing what they need to share, and nobody gets cut off. So people are allowed to speak what they need to say. It can be very time-consuming, but at the same time, it's timeless when you're in there, because you're all in there and with the purpose of helping people, right, and helping yourself and then listening and supporting others who are going through whatever they're releasing or whatever burdens that they are laying down. So we, those experiences are very, very special, and you can't really, I've never, in my whole life, I've been in saunas and other places and sweats in other communities. I remember doing one down in Mexico a few years back, and they're quite special opportunities. They're not that common, because, as you say, most people wouldn't open their lodge up provide services for non-Native people, but we were a group that were kind of cohesive in our own, connected through our own work with spiritual practice. So it wasn't that, it didn't feel like we were offering services at that time, and really, really we weren't, because we were helping ourselves and then helping each other. And so that kind of nostalgia, as I was, over the time of COVID and being home and my, being limited in what we could do here, I started to refocus on that. And then I put in one of those questions of what if, what if we did open it up and offer services for non-Native people? What if we did teachings? And what if we were able to help people in this way? And what would it take to do that? And what kind of team of dedicated workers would we have to have? And would it be possible? All these questions were coming to mind. And, of course, for me, the answer is, well, why don't you just try it and see where it goes? Try it and see what happens and see if people will even come. Maybe they won't come. And then what ways would they help? Or would they be willing to pay for the service, or where would, you know, where do we get the supplies, and how, like, all these questions sort of started coming up into my mind last year when I was asked to teach a group of Aboriginal workers who were part of a Native Friendship Center about 2 hours away from me here in Six Nations. And the executive director there had a young staff. They were in their late 20s, early 30s. And she had six young people. And she said, Diane, she said, these are special young people. They're Native in ancestry. But they grew up in the city. And she said, and they've missed out a lot on their cultural training and cultural teachings. Would you be willing to teach them and help them build a sweat lodge, because we're coming into some land here in the urban area, and we would like to recreate a sweat lodge and to have that service available for our Native communities that live in urban, this urban center. And so that's how it kind of started, Nicole, is that opportunity came up last October. And mm-hmm. so six staff came from the Urban Aboriginal Friendship Center. And they came with tents, they were camping out, and they were here for 5 days. And when word got out that we were teaching about sweat lodge building, and we were teaching them about, you know, how it all worked in a general terms, but the main focus was, can you build one? And that's where I got my helpers, and I had some teachers come and join me. And we ended up with 25 people, and we were, you know, thank God we were all outdoors, because it was a time when we weren't supposed to be gathering in that numbers. But sometimes you can't prevent people from coming. Like, we don't, like, if people show up or they hear about it or they show up and they want to help and they want to contribute, our teachings are such that we shouldn't really turn them away, right? We should, and if they're keen to learn, and they're there with a good heart, and they're really focused, and like, let's work with them. So we ended up from six people, including the teachers. So it wasn't 25 people who joined us. It was 25 people in total, counting the teachers and the staff and the people who were here as helpers. We ended up with a group of 25 for 5 days, and they built this most mm-hmm. wonderful, beautiful, magnificent sweat lodge that I have on my back property here now in Six Nations. And it was done absolutely perfect. They took the time and care and attention. The only issue we had with it, perfect in every way, was its size. And it was, they built a lodge that could hold, I'm going to estimate, probably 15 to 20 people in there at one time. So it was really quite large. And so that was where the idea of teaching lodge came into mind when I saw its size. Because, you know, we said this is how it looks, and we explained to them how to put it together and how to bend the boughs, and everything was going into place. But we never like corrected them or anything on size. We just let them sort of go ahead and put it together the way that, so that they could learn in the way that they thought it should go. And it ended up to be perfect, except its size was very large. So it's practical for a teaching lodge to have a sweat that big. It's impractical for a healing lodge, where we would want a little smaller lodge that would hold at least six people. But this one here can hold double that, eh? Maybe three times, 18 people in that lodge. So what we started to realize that what, in fact, that the staff, the young staff had built, they built us a teaching lodge. So we said, okay, well, we could do a ceremony, explain ceremony, and we could teach. And in fact, that's what they're going to do. They'll be back probably in August, now that some of the COVID restrictions have lifted. They'll probably come back in August, and then we'll actually go into the lodge sometime in August or early September. And that's where they'll get the teachings around how the ceremony works and what the directions mean and everything that they haven't gotten to date. So they'll be actually able to experience a sweat lodge ceremony. And then they should be ready to go home and build a lodge in their own home territory and then know how what it takes to operate it, and then be able to assist whoever they're going to secure as a sweat lodge conductor for their area, that they'll be able to support and know how it runs and how it functions, and be able to assist in a really good way. And that means they become the dedicated team for that area, right? And then that's what I'm saying is I would like to have a similar team in my own area. So it means, basically it means opening it up to the general public and seeing who shows up. And then from that group, seeing who's committed, right? Who's really into this and wants to learn and wants to further their own understanding, but also to acquire the knowledge and to be able to practice it. That's kind of what I'm looking for. So I can't get that unless I open it up, right? So I have to open it up to the general public. And teachings allow us to open it up to people of all nations, because if you really look back at some of the cultural teachings, my own in particular, there is a story in our oral tradition, in our culture, that talks about that great tree of peace that has roots that grow up, reach, and extend in four directions. And the teaching is very clear. It says any nation, any person of any nation is welcome to lay down their weapons of war, eh? Whether it's weapons of war nowadays can be verbal, eh? And lay those down in order to follow one of those roots to that tree of peace, and then participate, right, in the activities. So the tree of peace is for everyone. It wasn't just for Six Nations people or Aboriginal people. It was for any nation, for any people to come who were willing to learn about the great law of peace and those teachings. And then you would take shelter, they would say. You would take shelter under that tree of peace, and you would become that yourself, eh? Looking and being taught and trained and being able to achieve that, first of all, inner peace. And then inner peace leads to the outer peace that we experience. And so so that's kind of where I was at when I was thinking this through just a few months ago, actually. Because things were starting to open up, and then we got closed down again. But when it was opening up there, we had time to be able to clean the land and to clear certain aspects while we were home. And that's when I started to reminisce, say, and I started to feel nostalgic about the times we did have here. And I thought, why not? Why not? Why not consider it? Most people don't utilize it or offer their services for that. You're right. It wouldn't be open to the general public or Native people or non-Native people, but I think it's time now. I think the times have changed, and people are awakening and becoming more aware and are seeking spiritual processes. And so that's why I'm considering it now. And I won't know till I try it, right?
It's a great gift and opportunity for people. I've literally never heard of it before, so it's, you always had to sort of have an in, you know, to get in, and this is huge. You know, since it's come up in our natural flow of conversation, we should get you to explain and describe, if you can, how it is different. Like, this is not like going into a sauna. There's no night and day comparison. I mean, completely a deep, profound, and it is timeless. It's this altered state, and I've always attempted to explain it to people that I've spoken with who had never been through one, but maybe can you explain what that is and what the connection is?
I'll give it a shot. This is what's coming to mind now, and I tend to go with what appears in my thought patterns, but what's coming to mind at this moment is I just got back from a 10-day road trip, and I was in another Native community, and I met a young woman there in my workshop, in our Good Mind workshop, in the healing weekend we had there. And we had 10 women signed up, and there was myself, my nephew, and my son who were in charge, and we were teaching this process of healing and then going to take the people through the work. And this one young woman presented herself to me, and it was quite mystical and magical, people would say, because she had a dream. And she said in the dream, she said, I was there in the dream, and I was obviously in need of help, and I was talking to this woman, and this woman kept, I didn't know this woman, I had never met her, I had nothing, no point of reference for her at all, but there was this woman in this dream, and she kept telling me and talking to me about my healing and my wellness, and she said that I needed to engage in all of that work because I needed to be ready to help this person. And she says, and the woman in the dream pointed to this man who was standing there. And once again, same thing. I didn't know who the man was. There was no point of reference for who he was. But you kept adamantly saying to me, you need to do your work. And when you are able to do your work, you'll be able to assist him. And you kept pointing to this man. And she said, and this was a really vivid dream. And she said, I didn't even know if I was awake or whether it was a dream. She said, it was so real. And she said, but I didn't understand it. It was kind of out of the ordinary, like not the normal dream, right? And so it stood out to her in her mind. And so she said that was a few years ago. And so in the workshop, we did a workshop, we call it Real School, and my son leads that one, and then I support him. And so we were supporting my son, Isabla Daniel, who used his Mohawk name, and it means he changes things. And so so he was leading the workshop, and this young woman showed up with two of her daughters who wanted to attend. And so we met them there, and she stayed for 2 days, and it was on the second day that she came and told me about the dream. And she was crying, and she was shaking, and she was having a hard time. And she said, you know, Diane, she says, I don't know you, you don't know me, she said, and thank you for coming to our community. But she said, I have to tell you this dream. And then she says, and it's really hard for me to share this because I don't say these things to people. I don't talk like this to people. And she says, but I need to tell you about this dream because you are the woman in the dream. And she says, and your son, Desagua Daniels, he was the man in that dream. And so I asked her to tell me more. And as she was talking to me, she was crying because she was nervous. And she says, oh, my God, she says, this is so hard. And so she was nervous and she started to cry because the whole telling of the dream was so emotional. And as she was telling me, I, too, was resonating with what she was saying, like as true. So I could feel in my heart and in my body that what she was telling me was not not just a general everyday made-up dream, like, you know, I had a dream, you know, that kind of thing. Listen to it. This was actually a dream of a quality that was being very spiritually directed. So I could feel the energy resonate, what they call the vibration, eh? So I could connect to what she was saying. I could feel it. And I started to cry. And so here we are, and I'm crying listening, and I'm nodding my head as I'm listening to her, and I'm going, oh, my God, that I can feel the power of your words and what you're saying. And all I can say to you is that I believe you and that this resonates, this vibrates in me, in my heart as true. And so that feeling of when you intuitively know or you strongly sense and you can feel emotional or feel the vibration and it brings out this like there, it was good feelings. It wasn't the fear, like she said, I'm so afraid to tell you this, but really when she was telling, she was also speaking her truth. And so I said, well, you can say it's scary or you can just say that maybe in the speaking or the telling of this truth, that it's coming through as an excitement, more as an excitement, as an energy that's able to move through both of us, that brings us together in this shared experience that says that what we're experiencing here is more than just a dream you would tell from your head. You're actually speaking this dream from your heart, and everything that's connecting is very felt very deeply. And she looked at me and she said, that's it. That's true. She said, I understand that. And I said, she says, oh, my God, thank you so much. She said, what you just showed me in your telling and your explanation, she says, is I can feel now the love. So the love and acceptance, that energy of love and acceptance, when you're in a ceremonial experience in something like a close quarters, because a sweat lodge is a fairly small enclosure, right? Like I said, even if you put 15 people in a sweat lodge, you're packed in there fairly tight. And so it's in a close quarters where the energy is being shared. So the energy and the vibration of what people are sharing emotionally touches people deeply. And you can also find yourself vibrating or resonating or sometimes even having these fears of whatever you're releasing. Sometimes it's excitement. Sometimes it's relief. Sometimes it might start off as painful, but as you speak about it and bring it out, that energy moves through the people in the lodge. And so it is a deeply shared, deeply heartfelt experience. And it's being created by the people in that space that is able to open themselves up and open their hearts up to this deeply personal and deeply truthful, it's very, very truthful level of sharing that you wouldn't necessarily get in a sauna or in some other experience where you're sort of sitting there and you're in your own space. And certainly you're in a sweat lodge, you're in your own space. But the level of conversation or the depth of sharing that goes on in a sweat lodge is what creates that very special experience. Okay? So even if the people are not saying a whole lot, your sweat lodge conductors and your four doorways, because in that lodge you need those four directions, eh? So east, south, west, and north. And there are doorkeepers in each one of those four cardinal directions. And even if you just went in a lodge and the only people talking was your sweat lodge conductor and his or her helper who is representing the eastern door keeper, and they are singing songs, the songs that they're singing for each one of those doorways and each one of those four directions can be deeply felt and can resonate the vibration of that music or the voice and the sound. And the drum that's being played in there, or sometimes just the shakers, it creates that vibration that touches people very much the way that what I'm seeing now is people are really getting into Tibetan singing bowls, so they understand that vibration and how it touches them when somebody's playing a singing bowl in a room or in a meditation circle. And it's similar to that when you're in a sweat lodge, that you can feel the vibration and the resonance and resonate with that, much like if you hit a tuning fork and your whole body would start to shake in unison with that tuning fork. It starts to filter throughout all of the people, and you feel it as deeply felt, heartfelt, very personal experiences. Even if you weren't talking, your people who are running the sweat lodge would give that vibe off. And that's very special because you can even do that with the sound of your voice and in the prayers. And what I've noticed is that if your sweat lodge conductor can speak, do opening prayers in the language, in a native language, those languages are very much rooted to the earth itself. So you've got that resonance and that deeply felt vibration coming through in indigenous languages or native people's languages. You can still do it in English, but I noticed that there's another different vibration if you're able to do it in a native language. It's very special, eh, to hear those songs and to be able to sit inside. And, yes, it's warm. There's heat in front of you. And then, you know, the conductor is putting on, scooping on water, medicine water, onto those rocks, and it's creating the steam. And then the songs are going on and the prayers are going on. And if there's an opportunity, depending on the type of lodge that's being run, for people to share, then their voices are also added to that mix. And that resonance and that vibration and that opening up of your feelings and sharing, that goes very, very deep into the soul, right? And that's what makes it special. That's what makes it different than going to a sauna or a steam room, eh? Which many people probably have those experiences of sitting in a sauna and in a steam room and sweating that way. But the ceremony and the prayers and the medicine water it's just special. Eh? People make it. People add to it. It's a nice experience on its own, but when you add the people and their voices and their heart.
Everything you've described is huge and well articulated, of course, about how it all comes together energetically and the connections. But whenever I've been, I feel or sense a very tangible presence of spirit or literal ancestors. What about that aspect?
Yes. And those songs that they're singing, once again, depending on the purpose, you can open those doors, eh? And when you open those doorways, they're like portals into the spirit world, where those energy beings, which are palpable, like it's tangible, and those beings can then come in and enter into the lodge as well, and that's where you would have that tangible presence. You've been in lodges I've been in lodges where they wouldn't necessarily open that doorway, but they would acknowledge those doorways and acknowledge the beings that can come through each one of those doorways. And so you can get animal spirits coming in, which are very tangible. The animal spirits, I was in a sweat lodge one time where the blue jays, you could hear the blue jay call in the sweat lodge. You could feel the wings, they flapping by your face. Like you could feel that bear and the energy of the bear spirit come in. And, you know, and so these are experiences that are really, like you say, more tangible. But then we also have people that go into those experiences and they miss it all, right? They wouldn't necessarily feel anything, or they wouldn't necessarily even have that tangible and kind of wonder what we were saying when we gave greetings to the bear who just entered this lodge, right? People wouldn't necessarily know that, and that's what my past experience was about. But now, when we're thinking about operating and opening as a service, what we're thinking about now is that people need to be taught to help to open up their feelings, and so that they can have a more meaningful sweat lodge experience. Because without that opening, without you being open, then you might as well just go to the sweat lodge or the sauna at the local YMCA, because it's not going to give you the meaningful, tangible, energetic experience that you could have if you were ready for that. So some people are very much in their heads, eh? And so they'll miss the stuff that goes on the level of the feelings. And of the level of the spirit. So we're well aware that those things happen. So we're also talking about how can we better prepare people to go in to have that experience, or do we just, you know, or not? Like we're in those kinds of conversations. I think people should be prepared, because otherwise you might as well just stay uptown and go to a steam room in a spa somewhere. And you'll have a similar experience rather than what we would be offering here, like through a sweat lodge, which is about connecting spiritually and about healing and about wellness. And it's about the opening up of one's spiritual senses, eh? And I think you need to be prepared for that as opposed to just kind of put in one just for the sake of, because you wanted to do it and you wondered what it was about, a curiosity. There's a lot of people curious, but at the same time, that curiosity doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a meaningful experience in there either.
Yes, indeed. I think I was plunked there because I was ready and I needed to see some stuff and some things.
You yourself have some, you're very open and have your own guests, eh? To channel in messages and things like that. So, yeah, you would have been ready for something like that.
So what are the the other things about this, like say people listening to this show think, oh, I'll just go build a hut in my backyard. And, you know, who runs the lodges and how do they get to be able to be allowed to do that?
Well, from my experience, we got, like, it's just where I was leaving off there. My last comment is that I've met people who are not ready for Sweat Lodge, but they thought they were, and they thought they could do it because they thought that was the place where they were going to feel something or see something or sense something. And so the people who run those lodges at that level where they're able to feel energy, they're able to see things, whether it's through the mind's eye or sometimes literally like visions appearing, like a daydream, like that kind of, those kinds of experiences. But the people who are running sweat lodges are people who should be able to connect to the energies on various levels, eh? So emotional energy, mental, spiritual, you know, you need to be able to connect to those different levels of the human experience. And some, when I say some people who are not ready, those are people who were well-educated people. They were very culturally raised in cultural families. Some of them could even speak the language, but they had absolutely no connection to emotion or to heart. And so, yeah, they were running sweat lodges, but it felt to me like they were running a sweat lodge more from rote, you know, how you memorize something and then you're able to put it out there because you've memorized it. You know the words. It's by rote. But their heart wasn't in the experience. And so, yeah, they ran a sweat lodge, and, yes, they did all the ritualistic type and proper protocol and proper things. But it lacked in the spiritual experience. Like there really wasn't any beings that entered into it. There wasn't any necessarily emotion shared in a level. And I've been in lodges that have been run by people who were not that open on the emotional side, and the experience is very different than when you have a sweat lodge conductor who is emotionally aware and emotionally ready and is a very heart-based and heartfelt person, so that when they're giving those prayers, they really mean it, eh? Like they really feel thankful. They really are grateful. And that quality of that gratitude and that thankfulness creates a beautiful sweat lodge conductor. It offers an opportunity for what we call the extraordinary experiences to occur beyond the ordinary, eh? The extraordinary or the extraordinary experience. So you'll have sweat lodge conductors of all those different levels of awareness and different levels of understanding, different levels of knowledge, and people will go ahead and conduct their lodges. So there's nobody out there policing people and saying you're a sweat lodge conductor and you're not. There's nobody doing that. So people can actually go ahead, and if they want to create one, and they can run one because they have the mechanics of it. They know how to build it. They know how it works. And then there are those sweat lodge conductors that are very, very much open, and so open. They're connected to the elements, say, of fire, water, earth and air. They're connected to the spirits and the animals and the birds, and they're so connected to those aspects of creation that whenever they run a lodge and they open up themselves and open the doorways up, that these experiences, these extraordinary experiences, then become possible. So you have everybody in between, eh? That between, you know, the ones who have just learned it by rote versus the ones who have the extra. They're more open, their energy is more open, and they're really, really connected and well connected to the elements and the energy of creation. Very, very different. So where is the onus on? The onus would be, we would, as a teacher, I would say, you have to be discerning. So going into a sweat lodge with this person doesn't mean, that they weren't qualified, let's say, to do it. They did what they did, and they did what they knew, and they did it to the best of their ability. This was your experience, but there are other people who are running sweat lodges and conducting them from a far more elemental or energetic experience that you might not have gotten from this person who was doing it by rote or doing it because he or she knew how to do that. So people have to be discerning when and so that element of discernment, the onus is on the individual, on, say, me. If I'm the one that wants to go in the sweat lodge, I have to really be in touch with my feelings. And when I meet this person or when I get close to the lodge, if I get a feeling that I shouldn't go in there, I need to listen to that, that I shouldn't. Something's telling me not to go. I'm going to take that direction. I'm just going to sit out by the fire, and I'll have my ceremony here by the fire where I, and I'll pass on going in. And so, and the reason why we say this is because it's possible for individuals, and you may have even heard some stories where there were sweat lodge conductors running lodges and inappropriately touching women or having, you know, inappropriate touch and words and things being said in there. And it wasn't because it's the sweat lodge is the problem. The problem is the conductor. That conductor was not healed or was not in a good place, was not even, sometimes they're not even sanctioned by any people. They just open up and they're running this service in and of themselves, right? So they're not known, but they're still offering the service. And because people are curious and they want that experience, it's real easy to find yourself it's easy to find yourself connected in a lodge, which maybe that wasn't what you planned or you had no idea. So those things happen, eh? And so people need to be aware and they need to be educated to be very discerning. You might want to meet your sweat lodge conductor. You might want to feel them out. You might want to, see where the vibe is and if it feels good and what they're telling you is practical and seems like it's a safe experience for you, that would be the lodge that I would go in. Because it's possible to be going into lodges where there are people who are not, I don't know what the word is, I'm struggling to find the word, but they're not healthy people, right? That's possible that mm-hmm. you could run into that in the world, eh? But I suppose that's possible in any really kind of spiritual tradition. I think there are places with churches, with ministers. That's what we're finding out with the residential school, that there was,
yes.
Is that there are churches and ministers who were men of cloth or women of faith, and they sexually abuse Aboriginal children, eh? So it's possible in all culture groups, I guess, to have those individuals that are saying they're healthy when they're really not. Or, you know, or practicing something when they themselves are not that healthy of an individual and find themselves abusing other individuals. So, a person needs to be discerning.
What about safety issues in general, like around too much heat, et cetera?
Once again, that is also on the individual. So this is why I'm saying that for us to offer a service, I would rather educate the people before even letting them in there, right? Even putting, because the aspect of heat, if you need to know yourself and be discerning to a certain level where there's a level of heat that if you start to get a little bit of woozy, you might want to ask to be let out. And you have that right to ask the sweat lodge conductor to allow you to leave the lodge, hey? And there are people, and I've even sweat lodge conductors themselves who will actually not allow a person to leave when it gets to be too much heat, right? There are things, little tricks you can do in there, too much heat, like you can turn your back towards the frame and put your face down near the ground, and the air there will be cooler, and you'll be able to breathe, and you'll be able to take the heat, and that, you know, using that little trick. Another thing is to take in a wet towel, and you can actually breathe through the towel, it'll cut the heat, hey? You'll be able to tolerate some of the heat in there that way, or putting your, putting your face down lower on down to the ground. Like there's those little tricks to do that. But largely, it's the individual who's running the lodge usually has some sense of the temperature, some sense of the comfort, aspect of where individuals are at, so that if somebody is, struggling and you're in touch and in tune with the people in your lodge, you can actually stop and then ask them to leave. I had one lady in one of the lodges that I was doing a few years back, and she wanted to be in a lodge in the worst way. She just always wanted to be in a sweat lodge. She's a Native woman, came from a community. She was part of a program that I was working in, and she really wanted in the worst way to have the sweat lodge experiences. But one of the things that I noticed about her is that she had a thyroid issue, and I said, well, tell me a little bit more about your thyroid issue. And so she would explain, how her blood pressure rises, the heat gets through her butt, and, she'd start shaking and this kind of thing. And I said, well, do you know enough when to ask, right, to leave or to sit down if the heat starts to get to you? And she goes, oh, yes, I know enough to do that. But you know what? She didn't. She was so in her head. She so wanted to stay in there that when her body temperature started to rise and she was having a hard time, like with breathing, she wanted to stay. And I stopped that round and I said, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you to leave because you're not in here to suffer and we're not in here to, it's not about danger, hey? And I said, so you need to, at this point, I'm sorry, but you're not going to be able to make it here. And I got a really strong sense and a really strong feeling that you need to go out and you need to cool down. And, well, there's a gentleman out there, he'll help you. The firekeeper will help you, and he'll give you something to drink, and you can just cool down because it's not safe for you. And at the time, she was really disappointed. She cried. She didn't want to leave, but she left. And then when we came out and the sweat lodge ceremony was done and we came out, then she was still there sitting out by the fire wrapped in her blanket and she was drinking like the water and things. And she thanked me and she said, you know what? She said, you were right. I needed to come out. But because I was wanting to experience the whole thing, I was trying to push myself through it. And she said, and I'm glad I came out because, it wouldn't have been good for me to stay in there. She said, I may have passed out on you. And I said, that's right. And that's why I asked you to leave, when you could. And I knew you were disappointed, and I know you wanted to have that complete, full experience. But this was the better because your safety and your health is more important, And there'll be another time.
I highlight that it's not about suffering and it's not about danger. We are already out of time again and another show behind us. I can't believe how fast it goes. So let's shift it into wrap up in a bit of shameless self-promotion.
Okay, shameless self-promotion. Okay, I'm not ready to promote the Sweat Lodge yet, but I am talking about it, and that's what this show gave me the opportunity to do, was to start talking and sharing about my experiences and my consideration, I guess you would call it. And so at one point, I hope to be able to offer this service or this experience to individuals who want to come and pursue that. I'd like to be able to offer that in the future, but not without proper preparation. So maybe what I should be doing is promoting the come and prepare for the Sweat Lodge teachings and experiences as opposed to actually coming and taking a Sweat Lodge, but come and prepare for that, like be prepared in a workshop setting here that we would be able to do that. And I have people here who could assist me in preparing you for a Sweat Lodge experience. And whether it would culminate or end that training would end in you actually taking the Sweat Lodge experience, that's something that I think we could offer, but I think we really need to promote the training, the getting you ready, the prep work that it takes in order to have a safe sweat lodge experience, or to have a safe and spiritual sweat lodge experience, or to have a safe and spiritually and emotionally cleansing sweat lodge experience. So I think that's what I'm shamelessly promoting now, is that process to help people to get ready for that kind of experience. And that's where I'm going to leave it for today, Nicole.
Such an honor and joy to spend time with you again, Diane. I look forward to our next time 2 weeks from now. And in the meantime, Diane Hill is all linked up at newsforthesoul.com. We're back in 30 seconds.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show. Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.